Hello and welcome to the Susquehanna County Conservation District's Conservation Corner. I'm Don Hibbard.
And I'm Devin Saylor.
And each week we bring you conservation topics and events from around the Endless Mountains. Well, happy spring.
Yeah.
Spring has officially sprung on the calendar, right? Mm-hmm. So yep. Looking forward to the first flowers of the year and seeing the buds break, all that good stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know, have you seen any signs of spring?
I've got daffodils popping by my house, so.
All right, cool. I heard red-winged blackbirds.
Okay.
That's a good one that not too many people know about, but, you know, they look for the robins and the geese and all that, but I was out in the wetland behind my house and heard those. You know, it was like 2 weeks ago now.
Nice.
Yeah. So, yeah, looking forward to just...
Warmer weather.
Yeah, warmer weather, spending more time outside. Snow's fine, but
yeah,
you know, I think we're ready. So, as we always do, we just bring you at least one episode of Eco News, you know, that you might not have heard otherwise. So,
yeah,
we'll start with you.
All right. So, I found a study online showing that the forest growing season in the Northeast here might actually be longer than it used to be.
All right. Yeah, I can attest to that, I think.
Yeah, I've seen it for sure.
Yeah.
So the growing period for hardwood forests has grown about an average of a month longer in the last century since temperatures have started to kind of rise a little bit. The study compared observations between the time of when bud burst happens and then the peak coloration of leaves in the fall. So not completely till when they're falling because they're not growing at that point anymore, so just the peak coloration.
Photosynthesis is done at that point. Yeah, gotcha.
And they were actually able to find an Ohio farmer that did something kind of similar back at the break of the 20th century, so they were able to kind of compare that data back and forth to see. They did find that leaves are staying on about 15% longer now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, for a short time span like that, that's quite significant.
Yeah, it is.
About an entire month extra that we're getting. So the study was kind of conducted a little, not too long ago, but around 2010, 2014-ish time. But they're looking more into it now. But they compared 7 species. They looked at American elm, black walnut, white oak, black oak, eastern cottonwood, staghorn sumac, and sassafras trees. So it kind of chose those. They're hardier trees, kind of found all across the U.S. for the most part, kind of something that's everybody can kind of pitch into.
Did you say maple? Did you mention them? Maple?
They did not look at any maples.
Okay, which that's is surprising.
Kind of, yeah, that's kind of what I thought.
Like the red maple is a staple in just about every forest in the Northeast.
I know, I've got one right off my porch in my yard that's starting to bud.
Several in my backyard. So, and even the silver maple. So I look at my neighbor's silver maple. As the other day, and here we are, you know, I understand it's like March, but the buds were out ready to break.
Yeah.
I mean, like they were popping, so.
Yeah, I know the ones on my tree right by my porch are quite large already. I was shocked to see how big they were. They really popped in the last week or so.
Yep.
They did see that through the different species, they weren't quite exact on the differences, but like they similar, like they all kind of gained more growing season, so. It's kind of good throughout. It's kind of bringing a positive look on like the rising temperatures that we've had.
Yeah.
That we get with trees longer.
More oxygen.
Yeah.
Right.
So they did note that they do want to kind of look into more species. So maybe they'll pull maples in.
Yeah.
Just kind of be able to see how they can predict how like the forests and their valuable carbon absorption will kind of change over time.
Huh. Good story.
Yeah.
Certainly interesting and ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we'll do a follow-up, down the road a little bit. But yeah, my first story that I wanted to bring about is, it's entitled, Brazilian Researchers Find Terrifying Plastic Rocks on a Remote Island.
Interesting.
So that sparked my interest right away.
Mm-hmm.
And like, terrifying.
Yeah.
It's like, are they alive or, like what's going on? So it turns out that Trinidad Island, it's pretty remote, only, I guess there's a Navy base there. That's it.
Okay.
But this remote island actually has been studied for conservation efforts. Apparently there's a turtle there that only resides there. So That's why the scientists are already there.
Makes sense.
But they've been surveying the beachfront, and what they found was these rocks. They're kind of a bit odd.
Okay.
So once they started to just, they started to break them down, analyze them a little bit more, they found that they were intermixed with plastic.
Oh.
And so they said, how could this be? Like,
yeah.
Plastic's now part of our geological record. And so what's been happening is, if you back up the story, just like every other part of the world, plastic's being used in that area, particularly for fishing nets. Okay. So what happens is the fishing nets are used for so long, you know, maybe some rip or get torn, shred off, and become no longer usable. Maybe they dispose of them in the ocean or just let them go. Whatever happens out there. But these fishing nets eventually make it to the coast, and there's a conglomerate of other materials there on the sand. And so the fishing nets basically melt into those other rocks.
That's crazy.
And become one big plastic rock, as they refer to it. They call it plastoglomerates.
Okay.
And so they're shocked because, you know, now it's a part of the geological record, like I said. And it shows how much influence man has had on the world. So, and then we say this like every time we talk about plastic, but just worldwide, we're at a point like where we need to figure out what we should do about this problem.
Yeah.
Just goes to show you, you know, how much impact we've had. And, you know, I think they've seen it, like when they've studied Arctic ice, it's there, you know, it's inside of people, other organisms, the small particles of plastic, you know, the microplastics, they call it, but it's everywhere now. And what that does to the ecosystem and what it does to our system internally has yet to be determined, but they know that there's definitely detrimental effects to both the ecosystem and, you know, us as humans as we consume it too.
Yeah, unfortunately, plastics become a huge part of everybody's daily life, and you don't even realize how much you're using.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, not the happiest of stories there, but certainly highlights our plastic use and, and the problem associated with it. So hopefully, you know, as we go on, I think we talked about other stories about, you know, mushrooms maybe decaying plastic or other materials being used instead of plastic. But if we continue to pursue those routes, you know, maybe
turn it around.
Yeah, some solutions will be out there.
Yeah.
Or are out there already. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so my last story that I have takes a little bit of a different turn, take it more towards the farming community. I'm closely related to the farming community. My husband's a farmer.
Yep.
So, this study shows that there might be an additive to put in your manure slurry that might actually make it a little bit more climate friendly.
Okay, what's that?
So, they were showing adding, I believe it's calcium cyanamide is what they're using. It's super inexpensive and probably pretty readily available for farmers because it's already something that they're using as fertilizer on their fields to begin with. So, just simply adding that chemical compound into the slurry is actually showing to cut methane production by 99%.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's like
almost that. Yeah.
Significant. And it's actually not just like an in the moment thing that it controls the methane. It actually shows for at least 6 months that it's keeping it that low in the slurry, which is pretty good because I know bigger farmers around here, they have the slurry tanks. They hold it until this time of year throughout the winter. They hold it and spread it. So being able to keep that methane production down for at least a couple months, it's not a bad thing.
No, it's good.
So they're also finding that it helps, the way that it's helping keep the methane production down is usually during the time of the manure being stored that there is bacteria and fungi that are in there that kind of break down the compounds, and that's what produces the methane. So this compound is getting in there kind of halting that. They gets in like there, the bacteria and the fungi, and kind of stops the production of the methane gas. So It also has a couple other benefits to it. It can help enrich the slurry. So when you do put it on the field, you're kind of doubling that fertilizer. You might not have to put that calcium cyanamide separately on the field. It's already in your slurry, so that's a plus. And it also helps prevent the formation of what they call floating layers in the slurry. So they can't, usually it's like a crust at the top that they have to go break up. So
tell me more about the layers. No, just joking. I don't really want to get into that. But yeah, so how readily available is it, you think? Or they mentioned
from the sounds of it, it's something that farmers are using anyway. Okay. So just simply adding it into your slurry instead of on your fields might be such that simple of a solution to it.
All right. Yeah, it's just selling farmers on the new way they can use it.
Absolutely.
And I don't know, what's the cost, or does it mention the cost?
It said it's fairly inexpensive. Okay. So.
Well, that's good news too.
Yeah, and then there's initial indications that it also might help with ammonia, the production of ammonia too, keeping that reduced. They're not completely sure on that yet, mm-hmm. but there are signs that it might also be helping that. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'll take that as a positive.
Yeah.
All right, speaking of positive, I'm positive at least some people heard this story, but the title of the story is Giant Flying Insect Found on None Other Than Walmart.
Okay.
A Walmart building, and it turns out to be a Jurassic era find.
Oh, boy.
So I think the ear catcher at that point is Jurassic.
You know, yeah.
You probably saw Jurassic Park.
Yep.
Right? So I automatically think of dinosaurs and... Mm-hmm. Then I think my next thing is like, how big is this bug?
Yeah.
You know, it's like huge, but it's not huge. We'll get into that. But the insect was found on the side of Fayetteville, Arkansas Walmart.
Okay.
And it was found by a doctoral student of entomology. So that's the study of insects. Mm-hmm. And I love this part of the story. So the guy sees this insect that caught his eye. He's going in the shop at Walmart. And he sees it, and he grabs it. He doesn't turn around and return to his car and put it in his car. He puts it in his hand, and he, like, shops Walmart. And so he bought what he needed and took it back out and put it in his collection of other insects. Labeled it as an antlion.
Okay.
Which is kind of a thin insect. Kind of looks like a micro... dragonfly.
Okay.
I don't know if I'd give you like a good image to go by. At least it's got the wings that look that way and okay. a slender body. Maybe a little different in some mm-hmm. aspects, but at least you get the idea. He thought it was an antlion and he put it away, like I said, and he was presenting the insect to his online entomology class in 2020, and he realized that he had labeled it as the wrong species.
Oh, no.
So we did DNA analysis, and it turns out to be this lacewing, a giant lacewing,
okay.
That really hadn't been seen since the 1950s.
Wow.
Vanished from eastern North America. And really, the recent discovery is kind of spurred on, you know, a new pursuit
yeah.
for this particular insect, and also people that have collections of insects to say, hey, did I mislabel something?
Mm-hmm.
So it was really cool to find this article and the fact that these insects have been around for that long.
Yeah.
And they're in ecosystems that either weren't thought of as being present in or have kind of repopulated.
That's awesome.
To some degree. So they did mention that they thought they disappeared because of our interaction with wildfires. So a lot of times we're trying to prevent wildfires
mm-hmm.
when, you know, from a historical standpoint, they've been there. So wildfires have taken place in the east.
Mm-hmm.
And us saying no more wildfires have kind of eliminated some of those species because of it. So
makes sense.
I'm not saying wildfires are great.
Yeah.
You know, in some instances they are, in some instances they aren't.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not taking that stance either way. I'm just saying that that's what happens when you say no more of this and no more of that.
Yep.
So I thought it was a really cool article.
Yeah.
It kind of, I think we sum it up by saying like two of our articles have to do with observation, right? So the leaf out of the trees and the growing season, like, that wouldn't have happened if somebody didn't observe that.
Yeah.
Take the time and say, like, what's going on in this ecosystem?
Mm-hmm.
Same way with the giant insect.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but I'm kind of like that guy in a way. It made me laugh. Like, I think I put on one of my jackets just recently and found two acorns in it. Because, like, I just grabbed them out in the woods and I'm going to plant them.
Yep.
So I just threw them in my pocket and went about my business and refound them the other day. But so I had to laugh. The guy's just like me.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I would have shopped with the insect in my hand. But whatever. It turned out to pay off, right?
So, yeah.
Yep. So I hope you enjoyed those eco news articles.
Yeah.
And we'll have more next month. But you do have an event for us?
Yes.
Okay.
So Friday, March 31st, over at Salt Spring State Park, about 7 o'clock at night. So it's a late night one here. They're doing an owl prowl night hike.
That sounds fun.
Yes.
Have you ever been on a night hike?
I have not.
I've wanted to. I have a headlamp. It'd be kind of cool.
So they are saying that environmental education, Tony DeSantis, short talk. After that, they're going to take you out in the woods. They're hoping to walk about a mile and a half, so be ready to actually go on a hike. And they're hoping to hear some hoots of different owls, maybe be able to identify them. So should be a fun time. They did say dress for the weather and obviously be prepared with your hiking boots, everything like that, to go out in the woods and bring a flashlight. And they do say that the fee is a free will donation this time. So.
Okay, cool. Yeah,
sounds like fun.
That should be a hoot. All right, so we did have a trivia question from last week, and that was, what is the largest bird in North America? So you had had a guess.
Yeah.
Was it the right one? I don't remember.
No, I think I said the eagle.
Okay, yeah, so it's the California condor.
Okay.
And they have a wingspan of about 9 feet.
That's pretty big.
Pretty incredible, yeah.
Yeah.
We also have a trivia for this week.
Yep. Going to tie it back into the event that I brought out with the owl. So what is the most common owl found in Pennsylvania?
Barred owl?
Nope.
Okay. Well, stay tuned.
Yeah.
Next week, we'll find out. I guess that does it for today's show, right?
Yep. If you have questions related to our shows, you can contact the Conservation District by calling 570-782-2105. If you missed a portion of today's show, you can go to our website at www.suscondistrict.org and find our Conservation Corner page with episodes, links to information about past episodes, and a contact form where you can reach out and ask questions or make comments about the show. You've been listening to the Susquehanna County Conservation District's Conservation Corner. I'm Devin Saylor.
I'm Don Hibbert, saying enjoy the outdoors.